A while earlier, before the geo revolution or the internet revolution that took place in India, games were already a mode of medium for people living in tier one cities or the truly wealthy people.
Right,
Because money was
exactly.
not a factor. You could always buy consoles, you could always buy high performance PC.
Hey guys, how's it going? This is Apoor from Being Sober with Apoor. Today I am back with another special and interesting episode. Today I have another friend of mine and a product manager, a software engineer with 5+ years of experience in product management, also in game design. So we can say all around quite a long time in the gaming industry. He has also worked or been in touch with the whole game development cycle and also worked a little bit with augmented and virtual reality. Which, you know, this industry is quite interesting to me because in the last 2-3 years, the growth has been exponential regarding this industry. It started as, I think what it started was from YouTube, and it has been now most valued industry, one of the most valued industry in the world right now. I'm a game lover. Usually I play a lot of PS4. We have Abhijit here. Abhijit, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, Apurva. Thank you.
So, Abhijit, do you play games? Do you play PS4? Do you?
Yes. So right now, definitely. So right now, I'm playing the remaster of Witcher 3 right now.
Nice.
So I've already got 50 plus hours down my belt. I also started playing Elden Ring on PS5. And I recently just completed the new God of War Ragnarok. So all in all, you can say that I spent an hour or two every day on my console.
Right. Exactly. Because last game I played, I remember, was Last of Us. So it was, you know, interesting game to play with, you know, Last of Us with a big story. So Abhijit, thanks for coming on to this podcast.
Glad to be here, Apoor.
We have grown together. We have worked together. We have been studied together, and you are in this industry.
Yes.
So I thought of, you know, sharing your peace of mind with my audience regarding this industry. What do you think is the scenario of gaming industry at present and the coming 5 to 10 years in the world? Plus, what do you think is the Indian point of view, you know, in this industry? Because I think, you know, YouTube has been playing a lot of part in Indian point of view. We can see all these, you know, YouTubers are playing games, coming onto the, you know, videos and kind of initiating the light or spark in this industry. And it has been quite a you know, large time. So what do you think about it?
So as you yourself said, game industry is now pretty huge, right? And if you actually look at the metrics right now, the gaming industry is bigger than both the movie industry, the music industry, and the sports industry combined.
Wow.
Right?
Okay.
So, yes. So right now, what you see in India is an emergence of gaming and penetration of gaming into tier two and tier three cities. So let's say before the geo era, before the internet was as freely as available right now, there was not much internet penetration. People were unaware. The YouTube penetration was less. And so the medium of entertainment were mostly TV shows and serials or books, right? So now people are coming into terms with the fact that games can be a proper source of entertainment. And this is not the scenario that's just happening in India, right? This has been happening all over the world. And if you take, let's say, 20 years ago, the same thing happened back in the US. So that is where everything started. It has slowly grown into the behemoth it is right now. But yeah, that is what is happening. That because of the internet penetration, the entire ecosystem is growing. People are becoming aware of what games are. So we also have this growing esports ecosystem, right? The government of India has actually termed esports as a proper sporting event, right? Now you also have a new technology called virtual reality and augmented reality. So even though it's still in its infancy, I do see a lot of potential for it in the future. And because there is so much money to be made in the gaming industry, I also see a lot of capital firms and funding companies that is going to pump money into the Indian ecosystem.
Got it, got it. So basically, what you're saying is because of a lot of internet penetration into the tier two and tier three cities, a lot of people are becoming, first of all, aware of what the game is, what, actually this industry is, and actually experiencing it because of this internet
Definitely,
penetration.
definitely, definitely. But because if you see a while earlier, before the Jio revolution or the internet revolution that took place in India, games were already a mode of medium for the people living in tier one cities or the truly wealthy people.
Right,
Because money was
exactly.
not a factor. You could always buy consoles, you could always buy high performance PC, right? So now you have mobiles that can be afforded by mostly anyone, and you have a lot of games that are there in the market, so the penetration has just grown. That's it.
Right, exactly. I was about to say that because in tier one cities, a lot of upper middle class people or higher class people have had the access to these games before the Jio came into the picture. So I
Definitely,
think rightly said,
definitely,
this is a
definitely.
very good point. And do you think recently Web3 has been playing a small role? I would say not a big role, but small role into this gaming industry because of this blockchain. And I'm sure you've heard about these games where you can go into and buy NFTs and showcase your NFT into the game, and you can
Definitely,
earn
definitely.
cryptocurrencies and all. Recently, Web3 has taken a shape shift into this gaming revolution. How do you think Web3 is affecting the gaming industry right now? Also, in the future, how is it going to affect it?
So right now, Web3 games are still in its infancy, right? So if you look at most of the Web3 games like Crop Bites, or if you take games like Alien Worlds, what most of them are trying to do is testing the waters. So people are not sure what will fly, what is going to work, how they're going to monetize their entire game. So
Right.
even right now, what I see the problem with Web3 games is that they have not got the monetization down. So if you take a look, so we keep saying that history repeats itself, right? That in the early 2009, early 2006, when the iPhone had actually come out, that is when the first game revolution actually took place, where you have had this freemium games, something in the lines of Candy Crush or Heyday, coming
Right.
into the market trying to monetize the user, right? You're not paying for the game. So that was the first time when a free game came into the market and then tried to monetize on it. So
Right.
it took a while for people to figure out how to do this right, the right way, and the people who have done the right way are still the top players. So let's take Zynga or King, for example. So these people are the studios that figured out how to monetize a free game early in the market. And that is what is happening even right now. People are trying to figure out how do they monetize their Web3 game, where does the factors of NFT come in, where does decentralization take place, how to set up their in-game economy, and how to set up the security and ownership. So
Right.
these are the factors that are still in its infancy, but what I feel right now is lacking from most of the Web3 games is that they're not fun, right? If you would have played a Web3 game, they're not fun in the
Exactly,
slightest
exactly.
essence, right? So a game on its core needs to be fun. You cannot turn a game into a chore. So what I think the studio should be doing right now is trying to define the core loop of the game, the meta loop of the game, so that users actually come in and actually play the game because it's fun, not because they can make money off it, right? So that
Right.
is how I think studios need to start thinking over it. And what I feel like is going to happen later down the line is that studios will actually come up with a monetization pipeline. Studios will actually come up with interesting core loops of the game that turns it itself into a self-sustaining economy.
Right. So, okay, summarizing what you just said, I think there's a very good focus on it because Web3 has come with a great focus in the last 2-3 years. So gaming studios and gaming companies kind of had a, you know, one foot out the door by including Web3 into the monetization policies, right? So just for naming purpose or just for monetization or just for revenue making purposes, they have included Web3 as a marketing gimmick, you can say, because, you know, you can they can partially say, okay, we have Web3 and we are integrating Web3 into our games and you can play it. But that's a very good point that you said. Games need to be fun, whether it includes Web3 or not, or any other monetization policies. If it's not fun, no one's going to play it. No one's going to have a effect on it, and nobody will come across Web3 as a technology into the gaming industry. I think that's a very good point. Coming to this gaming, how it affects. You know, you just said it need to be fun. So what do you think, how gaming affects our cognitive ability positively, and how it affects it from taking any other age group, you can say?
So based on the research, gaming has shown to increase your, let's say, attention and focus, right? It also enhances your spatial awareness, your visual decision-making skills. So games which require you to remember a lot of things has also been shown to enhance your memory, right? And if you look at people who actually have better hand-eye coordination are also gamers. And when you have to do multitasking, gamers always come on top because you have multiple things going on in the game. You have to take fast-paced decisions. You have to move your hands according to them. So I think it also enhances the multitasking ability of the user. So I think all in all, it does impact our cognitive abilities in a positive way. There are downsides to this, which are still debatable. None of them have been proved, but are, as you know, are all accusation by the other party.
Right. You know how I came to know about how this gaming affects our cognitive ability positively, because when this Formula One, I came across this documentary about Formula One racing cars. So they usually play gaming, simulations a lot before going into the actual race. Because of that, I think their reaction time also improves a lot. You just said, right? Because if increases our attention span and also increases our focus, I think that's a very good point. And there is one documentary on Netflix, I think so, on Formula One. Guys, you must check it out. So it has shown to play simulation games, and they increase their reaction time a lot. So I think that's where I thought it was interesting to share. So that's what I was sharing.
Also,
sure.
Also, what I've heard from few of my friends are that there's this exam by Air Force to decide if you are qualified to become a pilot or not, right? I think you're supposed to balance a ball in a virtual machine. I'm not 100% sure of this, but from what I've heard is that people who are good at games or have been playing games for a while find it easier to complete that test rather than people who have come across it for the first time.
Right, exactly. The test, I think you mentioned about PABT, right? Pilot Aptitude Battery Test.
Yeah,
that is a perfect example. That one also is a simulation game. So I think, that was one test that was included into those SSBs.
Okay. Yes.
Moving on, Abhijit, as you said, you are a product manager right now. So in Super Gaming, so what does a typical day of a PM look like in your life? So what tasks do you do what cycle?
So for a product manager in a gaming company, it always depends on what exact cycle your product is currently at,
right?
So you have multiple cycles. You have an early stage product, you have a mid stage product, you have a product that is sunsetting, right? So let's take my product, for example, which is a Pac-Man game, right? So we have the game running on iOS and Android. And so a typical day for me would be having a morning stand-up, which I lead. I go through everyone in the studio on what they're working on, if they have any blockers, if they have an issue. Then comes the prioritization of the tasks that has already been planned. So once everyone tells me what task that they're going to do, I have to sit and prioritize the task for our next sprint, right? Once that is done, because our project is currently live, I also have to do user research and analysis. So what I usually do is I look at the competitors of our game, what they're doing right, what they're doing wrong. Let's look looking at the latest update that has come out for their game, comparing it with our game and seeing what has failed and what has worked, right? I also might have to coordinate with other teams like the dev team, the testing team, the art team, so that everyone is up to date on what their current tasks are. Most of the time, I also spend writing queries and going through the data to see if the action points in our game makes any sense, if there are any usability issue, if there are any performance issue, if there are something in the pipeline that we can fix. So data is also something that I go through intensively on a day-to-day basis. So this is how a day for a product manager like me in a game studio feels like.
Got it, got it. Seems a bit interesting, to be honest.
It is.
Yeah, pretty exciting. Okay, cool. So moving on, these audience who will be listening to this episode are typical, people who might be interested in making a career in gaming industry, which you're working on already and have a experience of it. So if you can tell us, how can one make a career in the gaming industry, or what profiles one can target, or what profiles can they start at? It'll be great. Just a quick, yeah.
So, in the game industry, you have multiple profiles, right? So you can, if you're a software engineer, you can become a game developer. If you have good UX design, if you have empathy towards the user, if you understand what fun is, you can become a good designer. If you're good at art, you can become a good game artist. If you are a good animator, you can become an animator, tester, similar things, right? So now what happens is to get into the game industry in India might be a bit difficult because we do not have exposure to games as much as people in other countries do. We do not have good colleges in India that actually teaches you game development, right? So the number one thing that I could tell you as, let's say, I'm a product manager right now, but I started off as a game programmer, right? So what you can start doing is have a good portfolio. Get really good at computer science basics, get really good at computers programming, and make a bunch of games that you can showcase to the hiring manager. Right? So this is how you get hired as a, let's say, a game programmer or a game developer. Similarly, if you are an artist, increase your portfolio. Work on your portfolio, work on try copying art styles of different games, try making concept art of your own. If you are a game designer, come up with a core loop of a game, try to monetize it, try to come up with an entire UX research history for that game. So these are the multiple routes that you can take. And for any position in the game industry, I would suggest you have a strong enough portfolio.
Perfect, perfect, Abhijit. That was really helpful. Okay, so I think that was about it. Thanks a lot, Abhijit, for having. It was a great, great talking to you. And thank you for sharing the knowledge bites. It was really helpful. And I think we are going to record much more episodes going further, if possible, regarding AR and
Definitely,
VR
definitely.
technology as well.
Definitely.
So thanks a lot, Abhijit. And thanks a lot, guys,
Great,
for
great.
tuning into this episode. I'll see you guys in the next episode. Till then, stay sober, stay motivated. Bye-bye.